Of course, the real thing, if I say the real thing, you know what we're talking about, because they have done so well with their slogan, haven't they? That you know what the real thing is. And of course, that of Coca-Cola. But being the real thing is an important thing. I don't know how many of you ever watched the professional fishermen, you know, professional anglers when they're doing things. I watch it from time to time only because I guess what I marvel at is they catch fish. I don't whenever I go fishing. And so I watch a little bit, but I also realize I've been around a few people who have been professional anglers, or on the, let's put them on the border of being professional anglers, that there is some money to be made in the professional fishing. And perhaps you're aware of this story, and maybe you're not, but nevertheless, you're going to hear this story about a very prestigious bass fishing tournament. It was a tournament that was held in at Lake Mead, which is on the Nevada-Arizona border. Mike Hart was a very successful Southern California pro whose career earnings had totaled about $200,000 to this point, but he was accused of cheating during this particular tournament. And eventually he confessed because he was caught red-handed. And here's what he done. Catching someone who cheats at one of these tournaments is very difficult because essentially it's catch and release. You catch them and you keep them, and then when you come in you weigh them and then you release them. However, every once in a while, when you're doing that process, some of the fish die. And in the case of in the tournament, when a fish dies, they go ahead and fillet the fish out, and then they send that meat off to some non-profit organization someplace for their use. And so it is used. Well, one of the days of the tournament, after he had been out fishing for a while, and he came in and they was weighing his fish, there were some of them that had died. And so they gave them away to have them filleted. And so as they were filleting the fish, they found out inside there was a bunch of lead weights. And he had been filling his fish with lead weights in order to, of course, win the tournament. And, of course, they didn't say anything right away on the day that they caught that. They waited till later in the tournament, and when he brought some more in, they took those fish, confiscated those fish. They took a look at them when they found out that they had weight in them as well. And his penalty for that, of course, was that he was banned from the professional fishing tournaments for life from that. And we would say, you know, in doing that, and you're watching those tournaments and stuff, and you see someone who does something like that, you'd say, you know, that man's not the real thing, is he? He wasn't real, he wasn't genuine, he wasn't portraying even his sport in the right manner, in the right fashion. This evening we're going to start a series on David, and we're going to see that David had a life that was a real life. You know, David was Israel's greatest king. He was an ancestor of Jesus Christ. And so our message this evening on David is to be the real thing. You know, what does being the real thing mean? For us as Christians, it means that we're focused and we're authentic Christians. That we're not trying to pose as something, and indeed we're something entirely different. Like Mike Hart did when he posed to have legitimately fished, and in the end he wasn't true. Now, I know what you might be thinking. You know, I think maybe as I read the expressions around here on your faces, that you're thinking, Wally, you know, why is this study of someone who lived 3,000 years ago supposed to do anything at all for me today? You know, much less how you're going to make this real. And I don't even like fishing tournaments anyway, so you've already lost me in all this. And so how are we going to come with this forgotten character out of these dusty pages of history? How are you going to bring him alive and so that we can find anything out of it that's meaningful for our lives today? Well, this evening I'm going to set the table for the future series here on David, and I hope to whet your appetite and that we'll be able to answer that question a little bit. And we want to see, exactly what is real about David. The first thing that we see that's real about David, I think, here is that David's life is real important. David's life is real important. Matthew 2:42 says, "What do you think about the Christ? Whose son is he?" "The son of David," they replied. Then Matthew 23:23, "But you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness." And so what happens is that they got caught up in the thick of thin things. They knew some things, but they missed some things here in all this. David is one of the most important characters in the entire Bible. You know, I would infer this from the sheer volume of space that is devoted to this life in the biblical record. You know, David is mentioned some 600 times in the Old Testament. He is mentioned 60 times in the New Testament. There are almost 3,000 biographical portraits of biblical characters that we have. You know, the Bible is one great source of biblical information and of people, but of a lot of these people, there's only one verse that mentions their name. And then there's others, of course, that are more that is given. And we see that here in David, in David's case, there are many more verses. And when God takes the time here and the effort to capture these portraits and these lengthy portraits of these people, then there must be something there for us to consider also. And so, why did God choose to write more about this particular person other than Jesus Christ? He has more references to him in the Bible that we have. Why him in all history will we have so much information about him? And the answer is, of course, this man that we're going to be studying for the next few weeks, this man who was David, this man was the real thing. Not only is the amount of space devoted to David an indication of the importance and the influence of his life, but he is described as the father of Christ. David prophesied the resurrection of Christ, and the New Testament writers and preachers cited from David's work and as proof that Jesus indeed was the Messiah. David wrote most of the Psalms in the Bible. It was the hymn book of the early church. It was the hymn book of Israel. It is many of the songs that we sang today are taken from those same Psalms. And he wrote most of those. Jesus doesn't simply appear out of thin air. You know, Jesus is a historical person with a context. Jesus was born in a particular time and place and culture. And the life of David is inseparable from the life of Jesus. We can hardly understand Jesus without understanding this Old Testament context. You know, and I'm talking about understanding the Jesus of the Bible, not the Hollywood Jesus that we see sometimes, or the Jesus that a lot of uninformed people have. But we're talking about the Jesus of the Bible. We need to understand his history. And when we understand his history, we understand a lot about him. We get a more complete picture of Jesus when we understand things about David. And so we need this information on David for a fuller appreciation of Jesus. And I'm afraid that we have, for the most part, we have developed just a little skimpy information on him in many circles, you know. And it reminds me a little bit, of the story of the student at a university who signed up for introductory ornithology, and he didn't know what it was. He just liked the sound of the course, and he figured out maybe it'd impress his parents. Anyway, and he'd heard that it was a pretty easy course. It was taught by an old professor who gave everyone at least a C, and most people got A's and B's. And so after he registered, he learned that the course was about birds, and that the professor had retired. Instead, there was this young PhD who was just waiting to demonstrate his brilliance to the students. And it was an incredibly difficult course. And on the final exam, there were 25 pairs of bird legs from the knees down. And the students were asked to identify them. And he sat there and he looked at those bird legs and he looked at his paper and he looked at the bird leg. The longer he looked at the bird legs and his paper, the more frustrated he got. And finally he just jumped up and he says, "I quit! This is ridiculous! This is absurd!" And the professor said, "Now wait a minute here, young man. I'll not have anybody in my class do that. Now what is your name?" And so he rolled up his pant legs up to his knees and he said, "You guess." And he walked out of the room. We need to have a more fuller appreciation of the information as is given to us so that we understand how all this works together in the relationship to David and then on to Jesus. Because David is the real thing, then we can begin to appreciate and understand being of who Jesus is. A second thing here is that David's life is real instructive. Luke 6:3 says, "Jesus answered them, 'Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry?'" Now, Jesus asked this question, of course, of the religious hypocrites who were challenging the way that he and his disciples were conducting themselves. They're walking through this wheat field on the Sabbath, and as they walked through, they plucked off some of the grains of the wheat, and they began to roll them around in their hand, of course, separating the wheat germ from the chaff. Well, in the Jewish terminology at this time, that was considered work. And you, of course, could not work on the Sabbath day. And so the hypocrites accused them of doing something unspiritual, ungodly, improper, and displeasing to God here. And Jesus said, "Have you not read what David did when he and his companions were hungry?" And he proceeded to use David's example as a justification for what he was doing with his companions. Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the background and the history of what compelled David to eat the bread and the showbread, which we'll eventually get to. I don't know how you know that story. I don't know how many of you can relate back and understand what Jesus was saying, or what saying here, if you know the history and the story behind it. But if Jesus were standing right here and asking this very question of us this evening, I wonder how many of us would be able to fill in the blanks here. Say, "Yeah, I know what you're talking about." You know, but I think that because a lot of the David that we know is such skimpy pieces of information, some of us may not be able to complete that information for Jesus. But have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? You know, have we? You know, have we done that? You know, have we read that story? Some of us have, a lot of us haven't. Some might be clueless. We don't know hardly anything about the life of David except perhaps the story about David and Goliath. You know, we got that one down, we think, pretty well. And that might not be entirely our fault. You know, I'm not trying to beat anyone down, but we might be new to the faith of Christianity, or new to actually getting into the Word and start reading this material. Maybe somebody's told us that all the information we ever needed to know it could be found in the New Testament, and the Old Testament has no value for our lives. And maybe we didn't have the advantage of going to Sunday school and we're growing up and learning about David. Maybe we've been in churches all of our lives and they just didn't emphasize any kind of strong biblical teaching that dealt with any of this information. And maybe, you know, we just didn't go into that depth, and we haven't got the Bible that well and found it underneath us. But somewhere along the line, we need to step up in our faith and get serious about equipping ourselves and our foundation of biblical knowledge, because these Old Testament biographies are recorded for our benefit so that we can learn from their successes and, more importantly, maybe, we can avoid their mistakes. That's exactly what 1 Corinthians 10:11 says. "These things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for us." As warnings for us. Now that we should learn from their mistakes. But you know, have you ever met someone who seemed like they had to learn everything the hard way? You know? I mean, that's the only way they was going to walk away with the lesson. is to learn it the hard way. Maybe you got some children like that. I don't know. Maybe some of you are like that. You know, I don't want you to confess right here. If you want to confess, maybe I hear that some places you can make that into a pretty good business. And so we might consider that if you want to confess. But you might be that type of person, can only learn things from the hard way. This says here that these things were written for our examples, that what written down as warnings for us. We don't have to learn everything the hard way. You know, we don't have to learn everything by experience. But it reminds me of the story when about a man who was injured at work. And when the insurance company asked him to clarify a few points in his claim, he responded this way. He said, "Dear sir, I am writing in response to your request for additional information. In block 3 of the accident report form, I put poor planning as the cause of my accident. You said in your letter that I should explain more fully, and I trust that the following details will suffice. I am a bricklayer by trade. On the day of the accident, I was working alone on the roof of a new 6-story building. When I completed my work, I discovered that I had about 500 pounds of brick left over. And rather than carrying the bricks down by hand, I decided to lower them in a barrel by using a pulley, which fortunately was attached to the side of the building at the 6th floor. Securing the rope at ground level, I went up to the roof. I swung the barrel and I loaded the brick into it. Then I went back down to the ground and I untied the rope, holding it tightly to ensure a slow descent of the 500 pounds of brick. You will notice in block 11 of the accident report form that I weigh 135 pounds. Due to my surprise at being jerked off the ground so suddenly, I lost my presence of mind and forgot to let go of the rope. Needless to say, I proceeded at a rather rapid rate up the side of the building. In the vicinity of the 3rd floor, I met the barrel coming down. This explains the fractured skull and the broken collarbone. Slowed only slightly, I continued my rapid ascent, not stopping until the fingers of my right hand were way deep inside the pulley. Fortunately, by this time, I had regained my presence of mind and was able to hold tightly to the rope in spite of my pain. At approximately the same time, however, the barrel of bricks hit the ground and the bottom fell out of the brick. Devoid the weight of the bricks, the barrel now weighed approximately 50 pounds. I refer you again to my weight in block 11. As you might imagine, I began a rapid descent down the side of the building. In the vicinity of the 3rd floor, I met the barrel coming up. This accounts for the 2 fractured ankles and the lacerations of my lower body and legs. The encounter with the barrel slowed me enough to lessen my injuries when I fell on the pile of bricks. And fortunately, only 3 vertebrae were cracked. I am sorry to report, however, that as I lay there on the bricks in pain, unable to stand and watching the empty barrel and 6 stories above me, I again lost my presence of mind and let go of the rope. There's a man who had a story to tell, and I think he learned a lesson the hard way, didn't he? Some of us insist on learning lessons the hard way. And some of our stories may sound just as ridiculous as his did, but we insist on it. But these things are written for our warning, for our instruction, for us to learn from right now. Spiritually speaking, you know, we can jumpstart our growth and avoid so much self-inflicted wounds if we'll just take advantage of OPM. Not other people's money, but other people's mistakes. And David had a ton of them. But David also had a ton of successes and leadership principles and God principles that we can benefit from. And this instruction will help us keep it real in our own lives. Now, a third thing here. David's life is real interesting 1 Samuel 18:16. But all Israel and Judah loved David. And this is just the bonus. This is the icing on the cake as far as I'm concerned in the study of David's life. It's important. It's instructive. But boy, is it interesting. I mean, lots of things are important and instructive, but they're not interesting. You know, like accounting or calculus or Latin or curling, that Olympic sport. You know, whatever it is, they call it a sport. Opera, you know? Okay, they're not really interesting. I'm sorry. But David's life is interesting. Isn't it amazing, you know what? They can make a reality show out of just about anything anymore, don't they? I've never seen so many reality shows pop up on TV. You know, they got one for everything. They got a show, you know, that one time, I don't know if it's still on or not. I can't keep track of all this. I know every once in a while I bump into, you know, we don't really, what men don't watch TV. We just want to see what's on every station or something like that, you know. That's kind of where I am. And so sometimes I see some of these things and I don't stop long enough for anything benefit from them. I got more stations now than I ever had in my life, and I see less things on them that I can watch than any time in my life, too. But that's another whole story, and we're going another time. But, you know, they had a show called Cake Boss about cake makers, you know. Who would have ever thought that a show about a bunch of people baking cakes would be interesting? You know, but it is. They have a show called, of course, Pawn Stars about pawn shops. Who ever thought that watching people bring their junk into a pawn shop on TV would be a hit show? But it's interesting, I guess. What Not to Wear. I mean, that's a show about people with bad taste in clothes. It's interesting to say yes to the dress, you know. So I started thinking about my life. Maybe they could make my show about my life as a preacher. You know, we could call it Church Boss or, you know, I own the church. You know, that's it. Or we could call it Prayer Stars. Or we could call it Say Yes to the Bless. Or What Not to Swear, you know. But I don't think that would work because my life's particularly not very interesting. I like my life, and it's interesting to me, but I can't imagine anybody wanting to watch me read a Bible, a commentary, or watch while I write a sermon, or watch while I visit someone in the hospital or type up the bulletin or brew coffee, you know. But David's life is interesting. In fact, it's fascinating. I think we're going to love getting to know this man, David. Everybody loved David, whether it was Samuel or Saul or Jonathan or Bathsheba or Abigail or King Hiram, they all loved him. There is something in David that is magnetic and engaging. David is known as a man after God's own heart. A man whose heart was sensitive and open to God. Not a perfect man. Now we're going to see that. But a man to whom God could get his message into. David played many roles. You know, David was a shepherd boy. David the musician who composed so many marvelous songs. David the fugitive who was on the run. David the warrior, David the king, David the great sinner. But we love him in spite of his sins, and because in his sins he so greatly repented and was forgiven forever. And that teaches us about the transgressions and our transgressions and how God deals with our transgressions, doesn't it? David was the most thankful man in the Old Testament, as Saul or Paul was the most thankful man in the New Testament. In everything David gave thanks, he called on creation and animate and inanimate objects, winds, the seas, the mountains, the stars, the clouds, the cedars of Lebanon, animals, men, and angels to praise God. You know, the universe was not big enough for David when his heart was filled with praise. Now, maybe you remember this ad for the most interesting man in the world. The descriptions include, you know, his charm is so contagious, vaccines have been created for it. Every time he goes for a swim, dolphins appear. When it's raining, it is because he is thinking about something sad. The police often question him just because they find him interesting. His personality is so magnetic, he is unable to carry credit cards. Even his enemies list him as their emergency contact number. He never says something tastes like chicken, not even chicken. People hang on his every word, even the preposition. He once had an awkward moment just to see how it feels. And he lives vicariously through himself. World's most interesting man. Well, I don't know if David quite stacks up to the most interesting man in the world. But David's life is interesting, it is instructive, and it is important. May God bless us in this study. And may you not miss a single installment.